Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump said he'll appoint one of his former defense attorneys to lead the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia. Lindsey Halligan has no experience as a prosecutor, but she could replace a prosecutor who resigned under White House pressure for not bringing criminal charges against New York's Attorney General. The president criticized Attorney General Pam Bondi on social media and told reporters Saturday,
"And we have to act fast, one way or the other, one way or the other. They're guilty, they're not guilty, we have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now."
The president and several members of his cabinet will speak at today's public celebration of life for Charlie Kirk in Arizona. TSA-style security is expected. The FBI arrested a California man hours after he was released on bail after the state charged him with firing shots at a TV station in Sacramento. Nobody was hurt. This is ABC News. One town in West Virginia recorded dozens of drug overdoses on Wednesday and Thursday. Emergency responders in Charleston treated 35 overdoses, 30 of which required hospital care. Authorities now say they've arrested a 31-year-old man from Ohio on fentanyl charges connected to the overdoses. Charleston Mayor Amy Schuler Goodwin says,
"If you need help, we'll help you. I promise you, we will help you. But if you are here to peddle your poison in the city of Charleston and to commit crimes, you will be held accountable. We won't take this anymore."
Taylor Swift fans will have another opportunity to see her perform in movie theaters. AMC is hosting a 90-minute show called The Official Release Party of a Showgirl from October 3rd through 5th, celebrating the pop star's new album. It follows the record-breaking theatrical release of a concert film from her Eras tour. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
My name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires, a collection of wealthy Americans who share a profound concern about the dangers of concentrated wealth and power in America. Now, the fact is, you may not care how much money another person has, but you likely do care how much power another person has, especially if they're using that power to rig the rules of the economy to make themselves richer and you poorer. You see, there is a point where money is no longer money, it's power. And when rich people use their money to drown out the voices of everyday people, it threatens the safety and security of us all. Patriotic millionaires don't want to live in a country with a few extremely rich people controlling everything, leaving millions of people struggling to just get by. Luckily, we have a solution. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. Parents in Wisconsin are more stressed than ever, and one in four say they don't get the social and emotional support they need. That's according to a UW-Milwaukee report. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Wisconsin News Connection has more.
Professor Liz Sharda with Hope College says parenting stress represents a mismatch between demands and available resources exacerbated by self-reliant nuclear family models.
So this expectation that we have to do it all, that we have to be everything for our children and for our family system. And those expectations are kind of operating in a context of a real decrease in social connection and increase in loneliness.
Sharda says moving back to a society that embraces collective care could help to ease the burden on parents. That includes building support networks before they're urgently needed and shifting expectations about parenting to ensure both caregivers and children are getting the support they need. Collective care is grounded in interdependence and belonging and involves seeing others' well-being as a shared responsibility rather than an individual burden. This can range from formal arrangements such as co-housing communities to informal neighborhoods. relationships. Sharda says families with stronger connections to others demonstrate greater resilience in handling both daily stress and crises. She emphasizes the value of having multiple people committed to a child's well-being, offering diverse strengths beyond what individual parents can provide. Sharda stresses that this parenting epidemic needs macro-level solutions.
We also need systemic and structural changes too. We need support for policies that make connection possible. So it's not just an individual problem or a family level problem, but a societal problem too.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.5 WLAK.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky. Look for a few showers and thunderstorms across the area, mainly this afternoon. Highs in the mid-70s and a southwest breeze. Tonight, shower and storm chances continue. Mostly cloudy skies, lows in the upper 50s. More storms on Monday. Currently 62 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I'll be joined in studio by singer-songwriter Eric Jelen and UW Cinematheque's Jim Healy, and I talk about Robert Redford. Let's light it up state capitol style.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. A Kutagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. So happy to have Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute CEO, back on this week. And we're going to have an intense talk here, all four segments with Robert, if he has the capacity, because I know he's a busy guy. But a lot going on, and a lot going on with Native American Community Development Institute, too. I was just down there, too, and saw the great booklets that they're handing out, and the market happened today, and it was good to be down there and see relatives. Robert, thank you so much for coming on, as always.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. Were you at the market today? I must have missed you.
Yeah, I was there for about a half hour. Yeah, I got there early. I had a pre-record I had to do at this studio out in Eden Prairie with a client, and so it was I was short-lived there, and then I was checking out what's going on at the Indian Center on the 25th. I'm going to do a live show there, and that's on your Thursday. So we're going for the gala there, and I know you guys have two tables, so I'm going to bring one of my portable chairs and join you. Oh,
you're always welcome. Yeah, that's a great place to start. Next Thursday is the 50th anniversary gala of our Minneapolis American Indian Center. It should be great. Originally, NACDI, our organization, was just going to take one table, but so many people were interested in attending, we expanded it to two. I'm sure we could squeeze you in there, Robert, if you need a place to sit. But yeah, this is a big deal, 50 years, and folks who listen regularly probably know that we just have a new renovation and addition, and it's just spectacular. So there's a lot to celebrate there.
Yeah, it really is. And a former student of mine, Bobby Wilson, will be there too as MC, and I do believe.
So yeah, when he's MCing, and I see he's doing a couple of MC gigs while he's here.
Yeah, Yeah, he did one at the Indian Center with, I believe it was the food. They were just at your market too. They did a thing on Sunday, and he was
there. Yeah, Dream Wild Hell.
Thank you. Yeah, God.
They do their food, native food tasting event, which is so very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Wilson was emceeing for that.
Well, and if people aren't aware who Bobby Wilson is, he's a writer, comedian, a 1491er, also Reservation Dogs writer, and he also was he acted in one of the series. I remember he owned a head shop, and also he was with Rutherford Falls. He was a regular on Rutherford Falls.
He was a regular. He was a writer there as well. And yeah. One of them, he's very funny, very talented, super successful. And one of the things I really am always impressed by with Bobby Wilson is how respectful he is to people and respectful he is to us elders, Robert. And that amazes me. And something I will never forget about him is that he was actually born in a house in the Phillips area. He's probably one of the youngest people that I've ever met that had a home birth. But so folks who aren't from Minneapolis will know Phillips area is kind of the core of the Native community as well. So I just think that's fascinating.
Well, if you have the capacity, I'd love to have you join me and we can wrangle in some people on that day. I know you'll be busy shaking hands and stuff, but we'll start at 5 and people will be rolling in about the time we go live. So just throwing that out there. No, if you're busy, you know, putting your tux on and things like that, I'll understand. But
I'm going to be busy eating.
That doesn't happen till 7, though.
So. No, I would love to be on, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great room to work.
Yeah.
And I just love that in our community, we have rooms to work, right? And so I'm really looking forward to it.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago we really didn't have it, right? We didn't have that place to see and be seen and connect with community leadership and things. So I'm excited.
Yeah, that's I'm just taking pause on that. That's exactly right. Jeez, good point.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll know this. Back in the day, so folks who are familiar with the American Indian Culture Corridor on East Franklin Avenue will be familiar with a restaurant called Maria's. Maria is an Ecuadorian immigrant, it opened up as this little tiny one storefront restaurant. Now it's expanded to several storefronts. It's in the ancient traders building, a native-owned building. And when it opened, I was in politics. I was a Minneapolis City Council member, and that became my go-to place to meet with folks and to schedule breakfast or lunch meetings. Yeah. And it's just a wonderful success story. When it first opened, East Franklin was kind of rough. And I remember the legendary tales of Maria's staff having to literally fight their way into work in the mornings, you know, through some of the criminal elements that were hanging out there. But I loved it from the beginning because it became a go-to spot for a lot of politicians or public people. And I was like, dang, here in Phillips, we didn't used to have a place to sort of see and be seen. And, you know, now we do. And now we have several. But back then it was really a new feeling. And I was so proud of our community and our neighborhoods that we produced a place like that, and people clamor to be there, right? So
yeah, you're absolutely right. What's interesting too, I was able to, because I was going out to Eden Prairie where the AM 950 is, after heading out there, got to pass Maria's, but also before that with the Native American Community Clinic, that place is hopping right now. Jeez.
Right. So another one of our legacy organizations, Native American Community Clinic, they are in process of constructing an incredible new facility, 6 stories, 2 stories of services, and then 4 stories of housing, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a big deal. I mean, this is like skyscraper kind of construction, you know, concrete construction, sort of a disruption. There's no parking anywhere around the area, but man, it's a huge enhancement to the community, to the American Indian Cultural Corridor. And it's one of about half a dozen major projects that are either in process or recently been completed, like the American Indian Center, or planned right in the Native community, Native-led projects. And so this is exciting. This is growth. This is, you know, how I view it. And again, being an elder, I just turned 65 this last summer, you know, and we were given such gifts from our elders and ancestors that founded American Indian Movement and this density of Native organizations and services and presence along East Franklin Avenue in that area of American Indian Cultural Corridor. And so I'm concerned that about what we do with this legacy, right? And so I really feel it being kind of in this, you know, generational trajectory, and just to see these things building on what was given to us by our, you know, our recent ancestors. I feel like, yeah, okay, we're doing them proud, right? This is this is what we should be doing. And so it's very gratifying to see.
Well, I am totally, we have more to talk about with the Avenue and what's going on with Native American Community Development Institute. So I'm really happy that we started out in a good positive vibe here, because we got to get later on in the show talk in the trenches. And I'm so happy that you could be with us
for
the whole hour, Robert. And I saw what you were doing last week, and my daughter was waiting tables on the mayor at the same event that you were at. So
Dinner du Nord.
Yes, that was very cool. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Constipation with belly pain that keeps coming back and back and back. If your symptoms keep coming back, talk to your doctor. It could be irritable bowel syndrome with constipation or IBS-C. Linzess could help you get ahead of it. Linzess linaclotide is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. It's not a laxative. It's a once-daily pill that helps you get ahead of your symptoms. It's proven to help you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually. Do not give Linzess to children less than 2. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. Talk to your doctor and say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot. We are with Robert Lilligren. It's the Robert Show. The only person missing is Bob Blake from Red Lake, I think.
We'll have to have him on next week.
Yeah, we'll have to change the name of the show. Hey, and you're CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and yeah, a lot going on the Avenue, too, and a lot of positive things.
A lot. One thing I'd love to talk about is, I don't know if you caught this, but this week on Good Morning America, they featured the Red Bears, which is a youth program. Yes. Did you see it?
Yes, I did. Somebody posted it. Yes.
Yeah, so this is an incredible youth athletics program. There's a really amazing community leader, Mukwa Roberts, who kind of reinvigorated the whole program. And so it's multiple sports, football, basketball. And he's really rebuilt the whole program from the ground up. And it was just, it's inspiring seeing Southside Red Bears, they call them. And our organization, NACTI, supports them by being their fiscal agent, which is great. But those guys are just doing it. And so they were featured on Good Morning America. They were presented a $10,000 contribution and one of those great big checks on the air, and knowing Makwa and the incredible work he does in the community, he can go to a lot with $10,000. And so it was just good to honor Makwa, to honor our youth that participate. And we know what the outcomes, what improved outcomes we see when our youth are participating in programs like the Southside Red Bears.
Yeah, wow. Really good point. I'm really glad you brought that up, too. I got to get somebody on to talk about that. Really, it's amazing the good things that are happening in Indian country, despite what's happening nationally. And it's just an amazing time we're living in. And we'll talk about that in a little bit after you have any more great things to talk about. I know you had a great update on, we've talked about it a couple times, where you have that great magazine with all the Native businesses and that thing.
Yeah, businesses and services. We call it the Resource Guide, the Community Resource Guide. And we just published a new version of it very recently. It's online as well at our website, NACDI.org, NACDI.org. And so we launched the online version first. We just recently released the print version. And we had an event at the Minneapolis American Indian Center last Friday, a little reception. And I mean, dozens, hundreds, scores, maybe hundreds of people came and took a lot of copies of it. And it's as comprehensive as we can make it. It has services, you know, health services, housing. It has businesses. On the back of it, there's a QR code where you can upload your business information, which you can put on the website right away, the online version. We can put in the next print version. And it's just, NACDI produced one of these about 12 years ago. Yeah. Wasn't nearly as comprehensive or extensive as this one, or quite as beautiful. We have cover art from Jonathan Thunder, renowned artist. And people kept saying for years, even just very recently, they'd stop into our office and say, oh, do you have any of those guides left?
Wow.
Those resource guides from 12 years ago. And we're like, no, the new one's coming out. And we were able to leverage funding from the state, the health department, from a local health provider, Alina. We were able to bring on permanent staff, M. Mattson, and they just did a marvelous job on this and beefed up NACDI's storytelling and our communication so we can tell our story, but the community story even more thoroughly. And so it's just been a home run. People are loving it. People stopped in at the event on Friday at the Indian Center, and they were saying, oh, I'm so glad you did this again. I've missed this. We needed this thing, you know, and people are really excited about it. They're taking cases of them to their own organizations and things. So, you know, people are on the corridor. You can stop in just about anywhere, I'm sure, and they would have some out. Or go online at NACDI.org and check out the resource guide.
Yeah, well, I saw them. They were out with the magazines at the coffee shop today. I saw those.
Oh, nice.
They had a nice little setting there. That's excellent. So next week, too, you have an important job. I do believe it's the same day. It's the same day as
the gala.
Yeah, and it has to do with pickles.
Yep, and you'll be there too, right? So,
well, I found out that I didn't return an email, so I'm not on those. I'm not on the.
They run a tight ship there at Poor Sisters Farmers Market.
I was surprised and sad, but I still get some pickles.
You show up, right? So we're having we partner NACDI and Indian Health Board locally partner and hold our pickle off. It's a contest, a pickle contest. And I just love it. This is our fourth annual.
I think I've missed one. You know,
yeah, the first one was over at Little Earth, but their farm, and we kind of combine a little bit of politics, you know, and voter registration and voter outreach. We invite candidates to be present. Where this is a municipal election year here in Minneapolis, and so there's categories: spicy, sweet, dill, and those are our cucumber categories. And then there's the other pickle. So you can pick a lot more than cucumbers. And man, people really respond. They love it. So I'll be a judge. I thought you were going to be a judge, too bad. Maybe next year Yeah, maybe emails, Robert, and then but it's fun and community comes together. We're actually going to block off the whole street out in front of NACTI on 15th Avenue there. Oh. And have a kind of street fair, make a street fair out of it. And our market manager, Destiny Jones, Ho Chunk Woman, really has amped it up a little. And then Indian Health Board's Cassandra Holmes as the key driver and organizer. And so it's going to be fun. And if folks are wondering about it, the NPR will be there as well. You'll be there. Media will be there.
Yeah.
And NPR did a great story last year. Melissa Olson, native reporter at Minnesota Public Radio, did this great story. There's this hilarious picture of me snipping on one of the pickle entries there, you know, getting the smell test. And so they're bringing in a whole cadre of reporters this year. So it's going to be big.
Yes, it is going to be big, and it's exciting, and people will be able to taste the pickles, too, so it's not just the judges, and that's what I like, is to get a little bit of everything.
Right, and we're doing it in a much more sort of orderly and hygienic way to get the tasting out there, and people are delivering their pickles early. It's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun, so I encourage people. That's next Thursday, 11 to 3. Right in front of our building, the yellow building with powwow grounds and all my relations arts, and the street will be blocked out. There'll be music and things. So, come on down.
Well, and
another very cool thing. What's that?
No, I said go ahead. I was going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. No. NACTI is also sponsoring a short film festival this Saturday, 6:30 to 9:30 at All My Relations Arts Gallery. Oh, I think that's where it is. I shouldn't be telling people if I don't.
Yep. I saw some of the names of the short films, and Ajawak, who was in he's a prominent actor and director and filmmaker, and he was in Iron Horse, I think. Was it called Iron Horse or Indian Horse? Indian Horse,
Indian Horse,
you can see on Netflix. He's got a movie, and I saw that.
He's got a movie, and it's called The Comedian. He does, Ajawak's. Former NACTI staffer Elizabeth Day has a short in there called How the Bear Got a Short Tail. But there's 2, 4, 6 films. And so this is the first time we've done this in our All My Relations Arts Gallery. It's the brainchild of our gallery program director, Juliana Enright.
Yes.
And so she just took this and ran with it. And it's really going to be something.
Well, what I'm really excited, we got let me check the clock here. We only have a minute or two left that we haven't talked any politics. We've just talked about joy. And I really, really like that. And one of the things, too, I was talking to somebody who's not from here, kind of about, you know, natives really stepping forward the last couple decades. And there's things that we're doing. There's things that are happening. We have strong economic development. We have all these things that weren't there at one time, and we should be proud. And here in the Twin Cities, should be really proud of what's happening, you know, on the culture corridor, but also all over the Twin Cities and the state.
And the state and the country of the world. I just had a conversation today with a new NACTI board member, brilliant young emerging Native leader. And I was saying to her, we were having this conversation about how, with all the troubles in the world and all the damage we've done to the world, you know, I think indigenous solutions are the solutions, right? And so now that's starting to percolate up. And as our former gallery director, Rory Wakeham, used to say, everyone's indigenous from somewhere. It's just the amount of time it's been since you were colonized, right? So how do we all find our way back to this indigeneity, which is inherent in all of us, really?
Exactly. And you and I have talked about that, too. And I've heard the great speaker, John Trudell, talk about that, too, that, you know, is that we've all from a tribe at one time or another. If you look far, far back into we're the last ones to hold on, though. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Segment 3 is coming up, and we've been positive the whole time. I am digging this. This is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump said he'll appoint one of his former defense attorneys to lead the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia. Lindsey Halligan has no experience as a prosecutor, but she could replace a prosecutor who resigned under White House pressure for not bringing criminal charges against New York's Attorney General. The president criticized Attorney General Pam Bondi on social media and told reporters Saturday,
"And we have to act fast, one way or the other, one way or the other. They're guilty, they're not guilty, we have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty, or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now."
The president and several members of his cabinet will speak at today's public celebration of life for Charlie Kirk in Arizona. TSA-style security is expected. The FBI arrested a California man hours after he was released on bail after the state charged him with firing shots at a TV station in Sacramento. Nobody was hurt. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
A busy sports weekend. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports reporting from Cleveland, where it's the Packers against the Browns. We'll have a full recap of the game coming up later tonight. In St. Louis, another dramatic win for the Brewers. They beat the Cardinals 3-2 in 10 innings. Bryce Turang, the hero in this one, driving in the winning run. Brewers catcher William Contreras had to leave the game after getting his hand hit by a bat while behind the plate. X-rays were taken. Manager Pat Murphy.
He was in my office already wanting to play tomorrow.
X-ray?
Yeah. X-ray was negative.
College football, the Badgers upset at their Big Ten home opener yesterday, 27-10 to Maryland. It got so bad, fans in Madison were booing head coach Luke Fickell, chanting "Fire Fickell."
Yeah, I feel what they, you know, it's I feel what they, what their pain is, you know. But there's nothing that we can do other than keep grinding, keep working. We have to play better.
That's Wisconsin head coach Luke Fickell with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly cloudy sky. Look for a few showers and thunderstorms across the area, mainly this afternoon. Highs in the mid-70s and a southwest breeze. Tonight, shower and storm chances continue. Mostly cloudy skies, lows in the upper 50s. More storms on Monday. Right now, it's 61.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Earlier this summer, the Trump Justice Department requested states turn over massive amounts of voter registration, balloting, and election administration records. Two states which refused the request, Maine and Oregon, are now being sued by DOJ. The Brennan Center for Justice counts 34 states which received data requests from either the Civil Rights Division, formerly a watchdog for voting rights, or from DOJ's Criminal Division. New Hampshire cited state statutes prohibiting the release of such information, but Indiana confirmed it recently sent DOJ personal information, including driver's license and partial Social Security numbers. Maine received its first request in mid-July, which it declined August 8th, citing a lack of justification. DOJ's statement announcing the suit said, quote, "American citizens have a right to feel confident in the integrity of our electoral process, and the refusal of certain states to protect their citizens against vote dilution will result in legal consequences," unquote. Vote dilution refers to alleged widespread voting by non-citizens, an already debunked conspiracy theory from the 2020 and 2024 elections. The Trump administration confirmed last week it was sharing the voter data with the Department of Homeland Security. Secretaries of State Shanna Bellows in Maine and Tobias Reid of Oregon have vowed to fight the request in court. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, if you love Just a Bit Outside, the film about the Brewers, you're going to love the new film about Wisconsin sports from Sean Hamish and Paul Jaconi Berry. They're here next time with their exclusive announcement. Don't miss it.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone, and we want Lieutenant Governor to be our next Senator. I appreciate her doing that. I corralled her, Robert, at the fair, probably a little before you saw her. I had to ask her to do that, and she had no problem. She's done bumpers for us over the years and been on the show many times. And
Well, for folks who don't know, Peggy Flanagan is our current Lieutenant Governor. She's my whiter sister, and she is running for the U.S. Senate for an open seat. And
yeah,
I think has a very, very good shot at winning.
Absolutely, I agree. Hey, I just got to say this. I didn't see you yesterday. I was at the elder picnic, and oh my God, I've never seen so many elders. Oh,
I heard it was great. Yeah. And NACD was a sponsor of the event, along with a lot of others. But I just heard super positive things. I was actually up in Mille Lacs, in the Mille Lacs Reservation. We had a three-day staff retreat. I was busy planning for the next 3 years, so I had to miss it. But I heard it was just great.
Yeah, well, we saw the Make Voting a Tradition was there, tabled. There was a couple NACTs, Native American Community Development Institute. I finally fell into that hole, Robert. Sorry.
I think, did you have one of the big coordinators was Maren Hardy? And I think you had her on, didn't you, recently?
Yes.
To talk about it?
Yeah. Well, I had her on like three times, and I had her on the day before it, too. And it was funny. She wants to take your job. She was saying that she wants to host a show sometime during the show. And I went, okay.
I think she would be great.
Yeah. Well, I have to still beg you to do it when I go on vacation, too, because we have that Brown Institute kind of vibe going here.
Yeah. We're professionally trained.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you are. Well, we've tiptoed around. We've talked really positive here. Are we ready to talk about free speech and who does that apply to? And geez, what do you think? And how are you feeling about things?
It's hard to tell who it applies to. It feels very, very much like McCarthyism, right? And people are afraid to say the wrong thing about the, you know, and it all was kind of triggered by the murder of Charlie Kirk, right? And ironically, I mean, whether you agree with the guy or not, I don't, but he shouldn't have been murdered, and that's bad. But ironically, you know, he was a major free speech advocate.
Yeah.
Right? And now people are getting fired and canceled for just saying anything critical about him. And so it's kind of the opposite of free speech. And of course, the GOP and the MAGA folks were the biggest voices against cancel culture, when they felt they were the ones being canceled. Now they're just canceling everyone. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is taken off the air temporarily. I did just hear, just before I came on, that Jon Stewart is going to be hosting on The Daily Show tonight in response to this. So I'm sure he's going to be red hot. So I'll be watching that tonight for sure. But it's just crazy. People are losing their jobs in any realm, media, education, for saying anything critical about this person.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have people out there that are really stepping up in saying things like, you know, the things that you're doing are illegal, and we have a midterm coming up in less than a year, and you better lawyer up. And I appreciate that kind of talk, because this is just outright illegal, ridiculous, and lying. And the 30-35% MAGA people are digging it, and they don't care. But we know that hopefully there'll be things going down with these people that are doing this. I mean, he's hired so many incompetent people. Did you see the FBI? That person, the head of the FBI, has never been in the FBI. He doesn't know what's going on. He's a podcaster. Doesn't he have a radio show like you and I? He's a podcaster.
He's a lowly podcaster. I think it's clear to everyone that this president's objective was not to run a government. It was to destroy democracy, destroy a government. So he strategically put these incompetent people in place, and they're shredding federal institutions. And, you know, I'm a reform guy. Change is good. But this is harming people. And it's this prevailing attitude that as long as it's not harming me, or as long as it's not harming people harming people like me, it's okay. Right. And it's not okay. And there's this odd mentality going through, you know, this MAGA mentality where, you know, sort of white supremacy, it benefits me, people voting against their own self-interest, but just to keep things out from other people from getting things, right?
Yeah. Well, I just can't, and I don't know, we're a child of the 60s and a teen of the 70s, and I don't remember, and I could be wrong, during the Vietnam War or during 1968 when all hell broke loose, similar to this, if the press, mainstream media was so complicit. I don't remember that or know that or old enough to know that.
Right. It seemed like, and I'm with you, who knows, that wasn't my focus back then, you know, kind of where's the next party was more my focus at the time. But it just seemed like there was at least attempt to be balanced in news reporting. And, you know, I mean, there's always a political sort of leaning connected to periodicals or TV stations, but it seemed like there's an effort to show both sides. It was an effort to respect different opinions, and that's that's not how it is now, right? It's
right.
How do I shred my perceived enemy?
Well, that's even in sports. If you listen to the sports people now, they're just yelling into the yelling into the screen. I just don't buy in both sides do it. I just don't buy in that. And that's what the media now is talking about every chance they get. And I don't know if it's because they're fearful of getting canceled or what, but gruesome, my goodness.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, risk it, right? I respect people like who have big platforms like Jimmy Kimmel or like a Stephen Colbert or someone like that. You know, they just went for it and they're suffering consequences because of it, but at least they did it, right?
Right.
And then a lot is getting kind of sparked here locally. And we had a horrible mass shooting at a Catholic church and school here just a few weeks back. And
yes.
Children died and elders died. And so that has sparked more sort of vitriolic back and forth. And, you know, and then locally we had a series of mass shootings so far, no fatalities, but just a few days apart. All around the Native community, so I'm involving the Native community. And there was a mass shooting where 5 people were shot, one where 8 people were shot near a homeless encampment, and it just seems to be heating up and ramping up, you know, more than what I would like to see, which is cooling down and calming down.
Well, again, for me, I do not have any problem with hunters. I don't have a problem, you know, with fishermen or any of that stuff. But when you have these kind of guns and they keep on talking about it's mental health and things like that, well, first thing it is, it's the guns. And right. We need to talk about that. And, you know, I don't know if we talked about this, Robert, but I can't believe how many times I saw the murder of Charlie Kirk on the internet. And I mean, it just popped up. I wasn't even looking for it. And what, 20 years after Kennedy was assassinated? I mean, then we saw the Zapruder films. It's just too much.
It is too much. And I have managed to not see it. I can't watch that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, and he, you know, he was one guy. Again, whether you agreed with him or not, he shouldn't have been murdered. But he was a huge gun advocate. He was a provocateur, right? He said things deliberately to anger people, and mostly kind of lived his values and died his values, I guess. But there have been other more heinous crimes going on in the shadow of this Charlie Kirk murder, and, you know, no one's paying attention to those, you know. And so it's kind of sucking the oxygen out of our news culture, I guess. And then with all the people being canceled, academics being fired, people being, you know, people being fired from their jobs for criticizing.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it's not where I thought we would be in 2025.
No, I mean, really good point. And I, you know, I want to tiptoe around more of this, but I got to bring up this whole Republican factuation against transgenders. They have to bring this up on everything. And now it's reported that his roommate, the shooter's roommate, isn't even transgender. That was just put out there. And, you know, all I have to say is this when it comes to being transgender. It's like Caitlyn Jenner's transgender, and she's Republican. That's all I want to say. They're people, for goodness sakes. I mean, they're not.
They're all people, right? And it's such a, it's a small percentage of our population. You know, it's who really cares what someone else's gender expression is? You know, and the fact that they, that our transgender brothers and sisters, relatives are being so vilified right now, it's just, it's shocking. And it makes me wonder what goes on in your head to feel like someone else's gender expression is threatening you, right? Why are you so insecure in your own gender identity that someone who has a different expression is threatening? I just don't get it. Exactly. We need that enemy, right? They need that enemy to organize around. But like the whole transgender athletes, I can't remember what the percentage of college athletes are transgender, but it's something like 0.003%, right? So this is what we're going to get all bent out of shape about, is this minuscule minority of athletes. I
don't get it. And It's the boogeyman. We had to have boogeymans when they're coming at us, and this is the boogey person. And as you know, Robert, and you know, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a cultural expert when it comes to being Native, but transgender and Two-Spirit were the leaders of our tribes, and they could do everything. And that's something I always want to bring up and remind people out there that they were revered as Native Americans.
Well, I love it, and I love being part of this contemporary culture that we're defining, right? What does it mean to be Indigenous in the 21st century? And how often I'm in groups with my Two-Spirit brothers and sisters who are really assuming these historical sort of cultural roles, educators, carers, governance, artists. It really satisfies something.
Well, hey, thanks, Robert. We got another segment here. This is Native Roots Radio. We're with our friend Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And so happy that you can be with us for another segment and wrap this show up. Thank you so much. This is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A new analysis from Clean Wisconsin shows AI data centers in the state will use more power than all the homes in Wisconsin combined. Potential energy demand has been disclosed for just two projects in the state, the Vantage Data Center in Port Washington and Phase 1 of the Microsoft Data Center in Mount Pleasant. Those two projects alone require a combined 3.9 gigawatts of power, which is enough energy to power more than 4 million Wisconsin homes. Wisconsin has just under 3 million housing units in the entire state. Senator Tammy Baldwin has announced Senate passage of a bill that will help protect Wisconsin lakes from toxic algae. The legislation would improve monitoring, forecasting, and prevention of harmful algal blooms by requiring better coordination among task force agencies, state and local entities, and tribes. Right now on the Defender podcast, the Wisconsin Climate March is coming. Listen to find out more at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka Hicha Wicha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota. And we're just wrapping it up here. I really appreciate these conversations. you know, I'm so happy we started out the way we did, too, because there are so many good things happening in our community, despite what's happening around us. And that's something I think is really Native.
I agree. And, you know, we used to talk a lot, and we still do, about our famous resilience. But this is beyond resilience, right? This is defining our own futures, right? Defining what culture means to us, what life means to us here. And in all this depressing news, it feels really good here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to doing a live broadcast with you. I hope that'll be okay with you. I put you on the spot here on live radio.
Yeah, of course. This is at the Indian Center 50th Anniversary Gala, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, cool. No, I'm looking forward to it, of course.
That's very cool. And just to celebrate that, and like you said, 50 years, there's so much blood, sweat, and tears when it came to visualizing this and then having it. And then now just recently remodeling it. I mean, visionary people are amongst us.
Right. And there's a lot of folks in the community, friends and colleagues, and they were kids in the Indian Center, right? And our good friend Carrie Day Aspinwall, she said, as one of the first people, you know, in the door once it finally opened. And renowned architect, Native architect Sam Olvickson, who was the architect on that project, and wow, on a bunch of projects all around the American Indian Culture Corridor. But he was a kid that took part in their programs, and it's just really produced a lot of really amazing results, a lot of really amazing people. So you just wonder, you know, with the growth of the programming, the expansion of the cultural practices and programming there, what the next generations are going to accomplish.
Absolutely. And just, I get chills when I think about people like Clyde and Belcourt, who is American Indian Movement, one of the founders, and just those people that have had vision and didn't say no. And now we're reaping a lot of the benefits because of, we always talk about the seven generations before and after us.
Right. And so now I consider that whole generation the founders here, right? And we have this just wonderful density of the fruits of their labors, the Native organizations, Native people here in Minneapolis, and Native engagement, Native activism and advocacy, and we're losing a lot of them now, right? They're our ancestors now. And so I think it's important for everyone along the generational trajectory, but especially those of us who are we're closer in age to them and kind of remember what their transformation, the transformation of their work here, and that we don't squander this. If there's something that keeps me up at night, it's that. Are we squandering these gifts? I don't think that we are, but I think it's very important that we continue to really be serious about how we build on their successes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that your organization does well, and I think a lot of other organizations try to do, is really be welcoming for all our Native brothers and sisters. Because we've talked about this before, Robert. We have, I believe, I think it was
150.
Yeah, tribes that are represented here in 75,000 Native Americans just in Minneapolis, the urban Minneapolis. And I know we're here in St. Paul hiding out too.
Right, right. And it's an amazingly rich and complicated community. And so what's our relationship to the outside world, to our nations, to the outside governments? But what's our relationship to each other look like? You know, and I'm thrilled to work at a place like NACTI. I love what you said, Robert and Chima Gwech, about us being welcoming. That was a theme that really percolated up at our recent 3-day staff strategic planning retreat. The sense that we're a welcoming organization, and we try to be a welcoming community. And, you know, other kinds of work here, we have a 50-plus-year-old leadership forum called the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, MUD, M-U-I-D. I'm currently the chair of MUD. And we kind of grapple with this. What kind of an urban Indian community are we? You know, are we there's 150 kind of choices here, right? Mm-hmm. And we're on Dakota land, and how does that influence? And I'm going to share this. I was not planning to, but this we were having this conversation just this earlier this week in this 3-day NACDC staff strategic planning retreat. And we were talking about, and I think about our community this way, it's international, right? We have 150 nations represented in our metropolitan area. And so that's international. And, you know, and I often think of the relationship between those of us who live in cities and those of us who live on reservations. And there's dynamic there, right? And how we can better join forces. And as we're having this conversation, one of the staff members was leading it about our international community. I started to think, well, you know, that's a more open and welcoming term than saying urban Indian or reservation Indian, right? We're an international community. And so I've been thinking a lot about that just in the last few days. And I think I'm going to start using different vocabulary. And I always describe myself as a third generation Minneapolis urban Indian. Yeah. I'm really part of an international community that exists in Minneapolis. So I don't know. That's really wrong thinking, and I wasn't planning on talking about it tonight. But it's really come forward in my mind.
I think I have to agree with you now that you bring it up. Standing Rock, there was indigenous communities from all over the world putting up their flags each time they visited. And I was there, and Australia was there giving a flag and doing a ceremony. I like how you're thinking about that.
Yeah. So again, it's new thinking for me. Standing Rock was such a pivotal point in, I think, modern culture, and certainly in the approach that I take to my work. And so I'm glad that you brought that up. I was pinpoint when I'm talking, especially to non-Native audiences, you know, the founding of AIM, you know, and then Standing Rock, and these are pivotal points for me.
Yeah, me too. That's amazing. We got a couple minutes left. I guess what I want to end up talking a little bit to you about, because of your background, but also you're a public figure too in the community, and people know you all around. How do we protect our soul, and first of all, let me back up before you answer that. Next meeting you have with your staff, I got to get the combination to the door. No, I'm just kidding.
Never.
But how do we protect our soul here in these dark days?
Well, I don't have all the answers here, but this was another huge topic of conversation at our recent retreat, and we're really elevating that. And at NACD, we operate with an indigenous approach where we care for ourselves first, then our families, then our community or organization. And it's taken a while to really embrace that. And so now, what does self-care look like? You know, and it's in, we're looking to culture, traditional practices, elders, supporting each other, but really caring for ourselves. And, you know, it's sort of a lot of the icky stuff that's been happening here in the Twin Cities. And then nationally, you know, these dark times are really having an impact on people, and you can see that in relationships with each other. But we're really going to integrate and programatize more time with elders, cultural practices, and NACD is the smudge capital of the cultural corridor. People come to our office to smudge. We smudge a lot.
That was like my classroom. We did it before it was legal when I was teaching in St. Paul Public Schools. Hey, Robert, thank you so much for spending this whole hour with me. I really appreciate it, and great to see you, and keep up the great work. And I'm just, pleased to call you a friend. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm back at you. I appreciate it. And yeah, take care. We'll see you soon. Giggle up.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Arts Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Arts Radio with Minneapolis.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll talk to one of the newest candidates for governor, State Senator Kelda Royce, about what propelled her into the race to lead Wisconsin in 2026 and beyond.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique.
And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 107.5 WLAK.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Authorities in New Hampshire have arrested a 23-year-old man who allegedly shot and killed a 59-year-old and injured two others at an event at a catering hall in Nashua on Saturday. Authorities say there's no known connection between the suspected shooter, Hunter Nadeau, and the victims. This man says his daughter works for a catering business in that facility.
And she just happened to turn and look at the time where she saw somebody all in black just pull out a gun or a rifle and she started shooting. And she immediately dropped the phone and just ran.
Tight security expected today at the public memorial for Charlie Kirk in Arizona. President Trump and members of his cabinet will speak. The president said he's going to nominate his former defense attorney, Lindsey Halligan, to serve as U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. That's after the man serving in that post resigned under White House pressure for not bringing criminal charges against the president's political opponents. This is ABC News.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 107.5 WLAK.